I was thinking about the idea of Inquisition in relation to the Witchcraft Museum, and thinking about actually in coming home, what the museum gave them is a space not to be inquisited.
Inquired upon.
Because one of the things that I think I've been mulling over in relation to the questions proposed by this event is what if objects don't want to speak, I guess. And there's something about that kind of presumption that our objects are speaking and we're not hearing them. And I'm kind of interested in, well, actually, what if objects are being resistantly mute? And what can we say in terms of muteness as a strategy? The thing I was thinking about was the object's prerogative not to speak. So that would be my starting point, I think. So there's something about dumbness and muteness and the kind of the resistance of silence within objects that I'm curious about.
In science fiction, there's this, one of the critiques of sort of popular science fiction is this idea of the, I think it's the big dumb object. And it's really great because it talks about how in lots of science fiction you have to have the planet. And it's the planet that is this thing that doesn't speak but everybody sort of responds to. And I was just thinking about that when you...
And coupled with that is as soon as there is an object that resists interpretation, it's scrutinised. Mm. It's not ignored and left. It's even more... Yeah, exactly. It becomes more powerful. Mm. Because of our desire always to have it, have a voice, have an interpretation, to understand it, to open it.
Mm. So I guess quite often in some of these things, I'm thinking about art practice as well, obviously.
But with that science fi model, what they also say happens with it is actually people then project wonder. They deal with wonder and they deal with the sublime in the big dumb object, which sort of relates.
So the less it gives, the more important it seems to be. I suppose the only way of remaining silent is to be really, really dull. Mm. To be unnoticed. How do you become unnoticed? We make plenty of dull art objects, there are those unnoticed.
But then it's almost opposite to what I was saying. The harder it is to access, the more we want to. So actually, it might be opposite to the dullest object that has that kind of resistance.
But not dull.
Do you know what I mean?
Because it's communicating.
Well, not necessarily. It might not be communicating at all, but the fact that it becomes the object of vision.
But we're conditioned to project.
Well, this is this.
Aren't they? Well, that's why we become conditioned to project.
I like Michelle saying, projecting onto the big planet. Do objects talk? Or do we just project onto objects? It seems to me like it's probably one way of traffic.
And you could ask the question in another way, which is, are there people in the world who don't need to project meaning onto objects? Which makes the objects dumb, or do they project meanings in a different way where it's not so centred on the objects in the way that it is, say, in the current climate? I've been working nearly 3 years in Moscow, and there's a lot of Soviet stuff, and then there's a lot of obviously contemporary bling and things, and there is just something really different because of that history in how people look at objects. And because they haven't had the cultural turn in theoretical, the kind of huge thing that happened across the rest of Europe in the 70s, objects do something different. Not all of them. Plenty of them do things exactly like they do here, but many, many objects do not. There's something else that happens, which isn't necessarily your silence. It's not about their silence, but somehow they're not interrogated. Many, many objects are not interrogated to the same degree. Doesn't mean they mean less, but they're not interrogated.
That's interesting, because what knowledge can you actually get from an object?
Rosetta Stone. Mm. Rosetta Stone. I mean, some objects are, inherently keys, therefore, and signifiers of other things, aren't they? But then, while you were saying that, I was also thinking of landfill.
Mm.
And that's because there was a change in how objects were valued and how many objects there were. As soon as there's a surfeit of objects, then they become, you know, they lose their magic, if you like. Magic of the commons.
East German conversation pieces or desk pieces, they're like records of, they used to be exchanged gifts between dignitaries, and there's loads of these gifts that have been exchanged, and they're symbols of these meetings that historically didn't happen, like these diplomatic visits that were under the radar, the correct sort of what should have been happening.
Well, so there were no gifts for those?
So there was no gifts, but there are these gifts to prove that that actually happened.
So they never do a meeting without a gift?
Yeah, and they were like these conversation pieces that were exchanged or something. Brilliant book, a collection of them. DDR souvenirs or DDR conversation pieces. I've got it at home, I'll show it.
That's a really nice notion, so, like, that, isn't it?
These things that in theory didn't happen, historically didn't happen.
Sorry, this is between who? Different countries.
Like, say, somebody from some trade delegation went to Eastern Europe, should have been there. They were there, and it was secret, but there's evidence of that happening. And there's also, there's evidence of their political leanings, depending on the symbolism of the object as well, to see how sympathetic they were to the position, you know, politically.
And the nice thing about those objects is they really are objects. Even if they're usable, they're never used. So even if it's a stainless steel knife from Sheffield, it's never used to cut bread, and if it's a box set of Mozart, is never played, it's in the shell of objects. So they really do become objects, even if they're perfectly usable objects.
Best tidings.
They never.
But as you were describing that, I was thinking about the way that objects might be booked.
Booked.
Sorry, my northern accent. Booked, not bugged. They might have booked, you know, so that actually, in terms of that. Trading between different, you know, if you imagine in the Cold War, the very beautiful desk tidy could actually have some kind of recording device.
The rock recently that Blair said that they didn't do, but actually it came out that actually during the Blair, I think it was towards the end, that actually we bugged a rock.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
They found out.
Oh,
okay.
Yes,
sort of
that,
lovely example.
So
that
was in a shrubbery somewhere.
So I sort of think,
that's quite interesting about a silent object, isn't it? Right, an object is silent. That object is completely silent, but it...
What does an object hear?
It records.
Yeah.
It records noise.
Because then it starts to figure as a kind of a witness or a confidant or a double agent in some kind of way.
A double agent object?
Well,
yeah.
It comes back to the idea of gifts. You never give a gift without wanting something back in return.
That says a lot about you.
Well, you don't.
Michelle's making a note of that.
Anybody give a gift, no one in anything at all.
Well, it's supposed to bounce back.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The gift of this booked thing is going to return.
That's a nice idea, object. Double energy. Yeah. In some ways, it convinces us that we have a kind of access to it. But actually, it's popular resistance as well. There's another side to that.
But also, I think in that, if you imagine it as a double agent, and think about it the way that you're talking about it, it's being gifted by various powers. I also think, what's the agency of the object itself in the sense of it's not only working on behalf of the two forces, it's also got its own agency. And what is that?
Or is it about its neutrality?
Mm. Well, that's there's a story about Obama and Gordon Brown that was on the radio today, and I think Gordon Brown has got a cigar case that had been made from wood from a slaving ship, and Obama had got him some videos that had obviously been kind of some DVD box set, you know, that was kind of just sort of, you know, they didn't want any more to be but just not significant to each year.
Amazon.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, so the idea that it's neutral is kind of, it's bound with a certain kind of significance.
But you now invite a mute object into your home for display. Because presumably if you'd selected an object, it's already spoken in some, you know, whatever way that might be.
Or you want it to say something about you.
Or you revel in its muteness. You revel in its resistance.
Have you got an object in mind?
Yeah, a few.
I'm just thinking about it. I've just set an object up for my home. Me now, it's 90. Just to art class on a Wednesday, she's doing me an otter. And I said, will you do me an otter? And I gave her a picture of an otter. So I'm setting up all those things in that object to go on my wall when it's done.
I won a camel, a porcelain camel in the raffle. Sheffield Allen.
Did he get it?
Yeah, and it's the only ornament I have on display. I mean, I have no affection for it. It absolutely is nothing to me. I've not won it. The only thing I've ever won.
Because it's not without. I suppose it's already got provenance, hasn't it?
Provenance. Yeah.
It's kind of like what I was saying earlier about like the life of an object when the home disappears, because it's not always speculation. Like, I just think like objects, they do speak more in museums, and maybe that's just like a practical fact of like the facts behind it. There's constant information. With every object, there's always a paragraph of text. And like that. I think that's quite interesting to look at, contrasting to objects within art, where there's not that like direct.
I suppose I think, you know, in terms of strategies of not just mutes, but of not telling the truth. I think that truth thing that came up really early on was quite curious, and I sort of think, well, actually, you know, maybe within muteness there's other ways that the objects don't tell the truth, and the idea of the lying object, or the object that speaks fictions, I think there's a whole load of those other ways of the object speaking that I'm quite interested
in. How can an object lie?
The DNA
show how it's fake, that it bought that mistake. Fascinating.
But that's another question, isn't it? So does the object, the original objects, have any more of a voice than the identical fake?
Oh, that's less of a voice. Like you can understand the object when you start scrutinising the fake. Should more people visit the empty gap where the Mona Lisa was when it was stolen to look at the gap?
Yeah, that's definitely a mute object. Oh, it's left a whisper.
Yeah. In a way, that's objects. Yeah, the presence was out to use when it stopped being used. That's when the presence, that's when the start coming objects. Well, that's what this thing we adore, the idea of the museum. That's something that's quite interesting. I'm looking at, I went to that Nicholson and Mondrian in Steve Cantor, and I'm looking at the catalogue, and there's a really interesting picture. And it's Mondrian in this 1930s farmhouse kitchen.
Oh, that's
and it's
legs,
really,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's in legs. Yeah. And it's really odd because Evan Sutherland's out there. And it's really odd because I've seen him in this museum, and I'm looking at this book, but actually, in that space, for me looking at it, that sets up, there's loads of turbulence in that image. That object does not fit in that space by any stretch of imagination. But then it moves in and seems really comfortable. So in a way, it's kind of reversing the same about a dog. But actually, it's real. When it really looks like an object, which I've seen in this photograph, with another context.
But that's given the power to the context, isn't it?
Or is it giving power to object?
You already had an image of what would fit in that space historically, and so it's jarred because it wasn't how you wanted to read the space. So the space has had the biggest influence on the object.
Also, this thing about the kind of the object's utility, the utilitarian value, and the utility of the object, and it's, you know, it's defined by its use value. And I think, well, actually,
in a way, that's when an object disappears.
Why then?
Because when it's in use, it's stop recognising it because
it should get used to it.
But that's what is it then?
It's almost saying it's also this thing about kind of seems to me this idea that you can access an object. That's about disappearing objects, I would say. Just making it continuous for your own kind of desire to access it. When you can't access it, that's when it becomes an object, it seems to me. Or when it resists that access. And it becomes autonomous from your own.
So objects can't be useful?
Well, I don't know. This is what I'm asking. It just seems to me to be an interesting distinction. It's quite a broad question. I mean, what is an object?
But it's also, I mean, it is also about, it's the register in which you're reading it, because if you're, you know, it's like we're all sitting here, and actually, I mean, if the fact that you were sitting on a chair, and you were aware of that chair, and it was your bum was saying all the time, I'm sitting on a chair, what's the chair like, what's the chair like? You have a whole, we all have a, the absolute mechanism in humans to ignore a huge amount of everyday stuff, because it's an overload of information, so... For me, that thing about silence is—it's very interesting about that gap between and that, however, the degree of consciousness required to abstract yourself, to distance yourself, and which is exactly the way you're using the word object, which I think is really interesting, which is it implies immediately a distance where you perceive it as an object, and so things are silent when they're completely embedded in that everyday instinctiveness. Nobody's thinking, look at this cup, or look at this table, or look at these glasses. Of course we're not. We just couldn't do it. So
also, I'm kind of quite interested in that sense of, it's going on a bit of a tangent, I think, but the idea of the utility is the object's cover. You know, if you sort of think one of the undercurrents is the inner life of objects, and actually its utility prevents us from believing that it's got an inner life. And it's an amazing cover in that sense, that you don't even think of it as having a life force, because you think of it as a cup.
Or that it could be possibly separate from
it. So it's amazing, amazing disguise in the sense. But then I like the sort of, I guess, because I'm interested in writing, I like the thing of object, or object is in its name in this sense. There's that kind of slipperiness of it being a refusal of some sort in its name, just in its name. So I'm kind of liking that aspect, I think. I just now I'm really getting freaked out by the cup of this.
Yes, because now you've got to look at it as a...
Is there something about a functional, useful object, every time you use it, you're wearing it out, it's going to end at some point?
So fragility.
Yeah,
I think when you walk along the beach, there are...
When you put it to work,
I think it's a real false dichotomy to separate out function and form, and to say, because if this was given to you by your 3-year-old as a special present for something, every time you picked it up, it would be much more than its function, and it is what you were saying about usefulness. I don't think anything falls, you know, whatever Mark said, nothing falls directly back into its use value and into its function. Everything has something more, but it has the potential of a narrative, and it's just... And some of them may not get that narrative, but that doesn't mean that they exist in a space where they're separate to them. So I think it is, it's a kind of false...
Because, and the longer we have it, the more references there are, the more patina
the
life that it's
having.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever
it's
that patina
it immediately accumulates memories. And it does have a form. You know, there is a particular shape to this, and it's not just based on the fact that I can do that. It's different to another sort of cup. It's got a particular sort of pattern on it. If you make pottery, every one of these will have more meaning to you. It will be more than...
But can the reverse be the opposite as well? Can one object have a real significance when you first have it, and then that significance...
Just fade away.
Yeah, fade away.
Yeah.
For sure.
So that patina kind of sort of dies away. Yeah. So the layers, I don't know, fade away.
Well, that's what I was interested with that picture in that farmhouse, because actually, I imagine that for Ellen Sutherland, for a while that thing just became as normalised, as bound into that cottage region, as water jugglers, etc., water jugglers, on the shelf.
Yeah. But we do also go and see objects that we think are hugely significant, British Museum or wherever we are, and we go and see, and quite often they leave us stone cold, and we know that they should have the charisma or power, and they're inert.
You know? Is that when they're in, when objects make it clear they don't care?
They don't care, they doesn't care about me.
It's kind of a bit like marketing, isn't it? An object's marketed towards it, you get it home, then you don't want it anymore.
And when you get a whole museum load, there's too many objects to care about. You know, when this cup in our house, one person's house, that there's only the one cup or the one set. You go to the British Museum, for instance, you know, you just can't care that much, can you? You just can't care that much. They're overloaded. So maybe you need to be able to make a personal relationship with it. And I'm thinking that people pick up stones on the beach. You know, how do you pick up that stone on the beach that's just right, just luring, and all the rest silent?
That like, makes me think of Fries Art Fair and like how people notice artworks are like there when there's so many, you just kind of they all have the same value.
But again, I suppose one of the things I'm really curious about today is that it almost presupposes an object. What you just said, I really like the sense that actually the object couldn't give a shit, really. Whether we respond ethically to it or not, it's not bothered, really.
That's why I asked, do objects talk? Because actually, public cases that they really do not. Well, or why should we care about them?
Caring or communicating, though?
No, caring.
No, but that's
that's
a
really interesting thing. Yeah.
They clearly don't care, but do they communicate? Because we as artists, those that are artists, clearly think that we make objects that communicate, even if we know we're deluding ourselves with our paltry effort.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, because picking up that pebble, that's certainly don't care.
And then we keep the damn things.
But we do, isn't it? There's a big difference between the pebble and then...
Not only that, it's then it's really difficult to throw it away. Even if you think, why am I carrying this wretched
thing? The film Inception, where they've all got their totem that they hold that shows that they're in reality or shows that they're not. I mean, it's like an anchor for reality. So, I don't know. Like, it's, that object doesn't care, but we care about the reality that object represents. Yeah.
So in that sense of it being a projection, I was talking to some lads about empathy yesterday, and they were saying the thing about empathy is that it's something about how it mirrors, it's something about mirroring that the object, if you care for an object, the object's not bothered, but it demonstrates your capacity to care for something beyond the limits of yourself, and something, particularly something that's not human. It's not necessary that we can't hear what objects are saying. It might just be that objects aren't speaking to us purposefully. That I don't know. There seems to be something quite violent in trying to make the object speak. Maybe it doesn't want to.
That's interesting. You said the object right to silence. Like anthropomorphizing it by getting it right.
Yeah.
Getting some kind of still kind of humanity.
So even within the vocabulary of that, you can't get away with
that. Exactly.
That
binding of anthropomorphizing objects that you encounter.
But as Michelle said, isn't it just the stuff of sci-fi and films and quests and adventures, and holy grails, this quest for something that will... the idea that when you find it, you'd know it. It's often that, isn't it? That, you know, all the other things that you could have chosen, this one somehow is...
I'm trying to think what word you'd use instead of rights. Is there a vocabulary that you could use to describe the sentiment of that without it being of a anthropomorphic nature?
Might have just been the object's style, but then even that, that's right. Mm.
Well, does it come down to us though, at the end of the day?
Objects all decide.
Yeah, yes. We should just lay up some objects and say, are you?
I'm saying no.
Who's got something to say?
That's what's really about. They can sometimes play objects, you know, sort of a stylus on them actually get. Mm. The object actually sort of absorbing. Mm. And then, so then there's almost like an embedded, a literal.
So did Ai Weiwei's individual sunflower seeds have a presence because they were hand-painted? And they could have mass-produced them. Presumably the actual little seeds were mass-produced. They could have sent through a spraying, painting thing. Is it, going back to the clay, is it the, you know, do they have to have that touch to?
If you were saying that objects have some kind of sentient possibility, then mass production would also carry the hand
exactly.
of the machine that made it in a way. That it would also be hand. It would also have that kind of inscription, which is kind of nice actually.
Time a machine acts, destroying itself. Like, tiny, tiny amount of wear every time. So each thing on some level is different every time.
So the objects are produced at the expense of that object.
Yeah, well, every time you turn your car on, it's great. One step above.
Okay, you take.